But first, there's a lot of foreign affairs to get our heads around and more coming up. That friendly meeting between Anthony Albanese and Donald Trump in Washington. Reports of a bust-up at the White House between the US president and his Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky. But then new US sanctions imposed against Russia and the cancellation of a proposed meeting in Hungary with Vladimir Putin. And all this as the US president is about to embark on a tour of Asia. First the ASEAN summit, then the APEC summit, with a long-awaited meeting with the Chinese president, Xi Jinping. I've been talking to Dmitry Sevastopulo, the US-China correspondent for the Financial Times. He's also led the FT's coverage of Anthony Albanese's visit to Washington. Dmitry, the meeting between Anthony Albanese and Donald Trump in the White House early this week has been seen in Australia as a triumph. The view is almost universal. Is that how you see it?
I think it was a very good visit for the Prime Minister. I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff was televised live before they had their private meeting. And I think one of the biggest questions for Australia was going to be, you know, what would Donald Trump say about AUKUS? Would he weigh in? Because he really hadn't done publicly in any kind of significant way in the past. And as your listeners will know, the Pentagon is doing a review of the program. So there was a lot of anxiety in Canberra. And Trump came out very strongly and said he supported the program. It was going very well. And at one point, the U.S. Secretary of the Navy made some comments about trying to refine the program and do a few things and clarify a few things. And Trump then came back again and said, actually, I don't think it needs any clarifications. It's a great program, et cetera. So I think if I was the Australian Prime Minister, I would have come out of that meeting extremely happy about that.
If you're the former Australian Prime Minister, you might have had a different view, of course. Kevin Rudd got a bit of a slap down.
He did get a bit of a slap down. I mean, you know, Kevin Rudd had tweeted some things in the past that weren't very flattering about Donald Trump. He had since deleted them. And one of the Australian journalists asked President Trump about that. And it was funny because President Trump didn't seem to realize that Kevin Rudd was in the room in front of him, was the former prime minister. And you know, when he did note it, when he did realize what was going on, he said, you know, I don't really like you very much or something like that. But as they were all leaving the room later in a part of the meeting that was not televised, apparently Trump said something like, he's not such a bad guy after all, I like him.
And I think, three key words from that meeting for the Australian delegation was AUKUS, full steam ahead, Donald Trump said. And as you say, AUKUS...
full steam ahead.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In Australia, ahead of that meeting, there was a lot of talk about, you know, Anthony Albanese taking a lot of time to get to Washington to get access to the president. But in the end, it was almost like the timeliness of the meeting was the key thing. And China helped enormously with those restrictions on rare earth minerals beforehand, creating a problem which Australia, Dmitry, was very well poised to solve.
No, as in many things in life, timing is everything. And, you know, the US and Australia had been working on a big deal to do things together on rare earths. I think it's an $8.5 billion US deal in total. But by the time they were ready to announce the deal, China had a couple of weeks before that announced these sweeping export controls on rare earths, which will affect the whole world. And so I think for Albanese, it worked out very well. He was able to come in 2 weeks after that and say, we've done a deal. This is an example of how the US and its allies can counter China in the rare earths space. And so that was another big win. So again, AUKUS was win number one. I think rare earths was win number two. So I would say overall, it was a very good visit for the Australians.
Yeah, I want to get to US-China relations in a moment, which is your beat. But it's been a dizzying week in Washington on the diplomatic front. I mean, there were reports of a shouting match between Volodymyr Zelensky and Donald Trump over how to bring the Ukraine war to an end. Then another pivot, it seemed, from Donald Trump, the imposition of US sanctions on Russia's two biggest oil companies. It's really hard to keep track of Ukraine. I know it's not your beat, but you'll have a general sense of what's happening. Or are you as confused as everybody?
I'd be lying if I said I didn't have any confusion. I think what's happening is, if you step back, is that Donald Trump, he loves to tell people that he has ended or solved wars. I think he's by his own count, he's up to number 8. He wants to end, or he wants to get credit for ending the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And I think what happens is he talks to one leader and then he starts to go in one direction. And then he talks to another leader, Bill Zelensky, and then he'll talk to Putin and he'll come back and he'll go in a different direction. I think it just reflects a kind of a frustration that this is a really difficult conflict to solve. And he's not going to solve it with, you know, tweets or messages on Truth Social. And I think what you're seeing is a kind of a frustration from Trump that this is a war that he said he would stop on day one as president. And we're now into, you know, 9 months into his term. And, you know, he's not that close to stopping it. So I think it's a frustration that's coming out. And that's why you're seeing a kind of a wild, almost like a pendulum swinging from one end to the very other end because of this frustration.
Let's talk about the significance of this trip to Asia, because up until now in Trump 2.0, so much attention has been focused on Gaza. So much attention has been focused on Ukraine. Obviously, we've had this trade spat between Washington and Beijing, but it hasn't been the kind of number one priority of the White House. Is there a sense now that they are shifting their focus towards this region?
I think it's a little bit that they've now done some other things, and so they have a little bit more space to start thinking more about Asia. But it's also partly because we have the ASEAN summit in Malaysia, we have the APEC forum in South Korea. So there's kind of a natural reason for Trump to come to the region, and obviously he's coming through Japan as well. But the real question in the coming days when Trump is in the three countries is, what is his Indo-Pacific strategy, and what is his strategy for China? So we've seen him do a bunch of different things, but I think most experts would stand back and say it's not clear what the strategy is here. So I think everyone is watching to see, does he give any kind of a coherent message that people can come away at the end of the week and say, okay, I now understand what Donald Trump is doing on Asia. And that remains to be seen.
You are the US-China correspondent. I think you're about the only masthead with a correspondence specifically devoted to this beat. Have you got a...
That's right.
Any sense of a sort of coherent Indo-Pacific policy at the moment? Are you as confused as everybody else?
I think the bottom line is there's what people in the administration, the officials, want to do, and many of them would actually like to do quite a lot of hawkish things and do some of the things that Biden did and then maybe build on them. But it's pretty clear that what Donald Trump wants is some kind of a big trade deal with China. And so often what he's talking about or what he's aiming towards is, you know, in a different direction from what his officials want to do, which is why it makes it difficult to interpret some of the things we see and we hear. You know, does Donald Trump want to take a really tough national security line on China? He did in the final year of his first term, but not for the first 3 years. And so far this year, he's done a couple of small things, but really it's been fairly tame, whereas all of the action has been on tariffs and trade with China and trying to solve that. But we're now in a huge game of economic chicken where the Chinese have put on their or announced they're going to put on these sweeping export controls on rare earths. The U.S. is threatening to hit back with 100% more tariffs from November 1st. So this could get very, very ugly. I mean, there's no sign so far the Chinese are going to back down. And if they don't, the question is, what does the U.S. do? And do things get even worse than they are now?
It's interesting to focus on those mixed messages coming from the Trump administration. I mean, in that meeting with Anthony Albanese, Donald Trump literally said, I think we're going to get along very well as it pertains to Taiwan and others. He was speaking about the meeting he will have in South Korea with Xi Jinping. And yet, his war secretary, the defense secretary in America now is called the war secretary, of course, Pete Hegseth, he's warned about the imminent threat of a Chinese invasion of Taiwan. There does seem to be a sort of difference of opinion within the Trump administration.
Well, the first thing I would say is when I was in Singapore when Hegseth made those comments, and I think a lot of people were surprised because most people, even the most hawkish people on China, don't think there's an imminent threat of a Chinese attack against Taiwan down the road, possibly, but not imminent. But with Trump, I mean, he has a tendency to say about everyone, whether it's Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, Kim Jong-un, you know, whoever, that we're going to get along great. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to make a great deal. Everything, you know, when he's tweeting and when he's talking to reporters, when he comes in and out of the White House, it's all very kind of ebullient like that. But often there's a huge disconnect between what's actually happening behind the scenes. So frankly, I think a lot of us just kind of discount those statements about everyone's going to be happy and everything's going to be fine. And the proof will be in the pudding when the meeting actually happens on Thursday.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do we know about that meeting? Where will it unfold? How will it unfold? What's the music like ahead of it, not just from Washington, but from Beijing as well?
Well, so we know they're going to meet on Thursday morning. That's all the only details we have so far. The kind of key thing that's happening in the background, which will actually have a big bearing on what happens with Trump and Xi Jinping is the U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is in Malaysia this weekend meeting his Chinese counterpart, He Lifeng. And they are basically trying to find some kind of compromise solution that will then allow Trump and Xi Jinping to sit down and come to some kind of an arrangement or some kind of a framework for a future deal. But if Bessent and He Lifeng can't come to some kind of an agreement, well, then that's going to set a very bad tone for the meeting between Trump and Xi. And that's when I think things could get very ugly. So we're first waiting to see what happens in Malaysia as a kind of an important signal for what will happen when the two leaders meet in South Korea on Thursday.
So really unpredictable what could happen. It could be kind of quite an angry confrontation maybe, or we've got really no idea.
Well, I mean, Trump keeps saying he thinks he'll get a great deal with Xi Jinping, but most of the people that I've talked to who are either involved in the process or, you know, are familiar with what's happening behind the scenes, most U.S. officials do not think that China is going to back down in a significant way. And then the question is, does the U.S. punch back hard? And do we get to a kind of a situation we had earlier this year where the U.S. had 145% tariffs on China and China had 125% back on the U.S.? And it produced a situation that Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, said was effectively an embargo on trade. And U.S. markets also reacted very negatively. So we could end up in a situation like that again, but it is very unpredictable. And so anyone who can tell you what's going to happen on Thursday is either has had a little bit too much to drink or is making it up.
I don't think you can predict what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes in Washington at the moment, let alone the next five days. Just finally, I know you're joining us from Tokyo. Donald Trump will meet the new Japanese prime minister, the first female prime minister. Dimitri, you are fluent in Japanese. I've been struggling with the pronunciation all day. Tell us the correct pronunciation, the significance of this meeting. She is known as a China hawk. And I wonder how that changes the power dynamics in the region.
Well, I mean, so the pronunciation is Sanae Takaichi.
Thank you.
She is a hawk. She was very close to former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, so she's kind of ultra-conservative. She comes out of the same mold as him. She's talking already about boosting Japanese defense spending further than the government had already talked about. So that will be welcome, very welcome in Washington. And I think, you know, in some ways, she'll be a continuation of some of the things that Abe did, where he talked about a free and open Indo-Pacific, bolstering allies' cooperation to counter China. And I think that's what we're going to see. The question is whether the kind of tenuous nature of Japanese politics and this new coalition that she's gone into with a new coalition partner for the ruling LDP party is whether they can keep the coalition together. And that will be crucial. If they can't, obviously she won't be able to do very much. But she's, you know, she's definitely a new face in Japan in that sense, first female prime minister. When she was younger, she played the drums and she rode motorbikes. So she's an interesting character. And how she gets on with Trump is going to be fascinating. I suspect she'll get on very well with him.
Dimitri, I remember being with you in Japan the last time Donald Trump was there. You asked a question at a press conference on trade that completely stumped him. So have you got one lined up for this time around as well?
I don't have one yet, but I guarantee you I'll have one by the time I get there.
Dimitri Savastopoulou of the Financial Times, thank you so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.